The Hagmann and Hagmann Report, coming to you live. That's right, just hours away from the WikiLeaks dump, the much celebrated. Will it be? Will it live up to the expectations? We think it just might, given the inside baseball information that we've been getting, and we're going to be covering that live starting at 3 o'clock. Well, when I say live, we're going to be watching that, monitoring that revelation, and of course reporting on HagmannReport.com. So folks, bookmark HagmannReport.com, stay tuned, and of course that's closely tied with Facebook, our Facebook page. Like us at Hagmann Report on Facebook, and you can follow us on Twitter as well at Hagmann Report. This is going to be important stuff, and the information that we have right now is it's indictable. And of course, Joe, you mentioned the point. Well, you know, what would it take given what we have so far? The information that's been whispered in my ear, if you will, is things that Congress can't ignore. And it's going to be interesting because this could very well cause or constitute a constitutional crisis. Any number of things right now could constitute that constitutional crisis, couldn't it? Indeed. Now, what would happen if we took out, or if they took out Hillary Clinton, if she was indicted, or let's just say that she said, no, I'm not going to run, I can't do it, or something happened, she had a stroke, or who knows, any number of things. What would happen? Well, you think you know, right? You think you know, because it doesn't the Constitution, isn't it clear? Well, not so much. Is this what they're pushing us to, a constitutional crisis? And then, of course, you've got the precipice of World War III, which we are already engaged, I believe, Joe, that we're, up until now, we've been fighting a proxy war against Russia in Syria. Syria's ground zero for that. But I think things are now becoming hot. They're becoming more, I mean, things are about ready to pop everywhere, including, and you talked about this, you referenced this the first hour, the economic woes of the country and of the world. See, the whole thing is, they're not just going to, the globalists are not going to just crash America's economy. They're going to crash the global economy. That's what their objective is. But getting back to, and I just want to finish this because this is really, to me, these are important revelations. When you look back at Clinton's, Hillary Clinton's and Bill Clinton's, their lives, their, of course, Bill Clinton being the president, and prior to that being the governor of Arkansas and the attorney general back in Arkansas. But you fast forward to, Hillary being the senator from New York. Boy, I remember many times getting caught up in the traffic there. But on January 21st of 2009, Hillary Clinton was sworn in as Secretary of State. Bill Clinton assisting, administered by Judge Overly back in, you remember that swearing in ceremony. She resigned from the Senate from New York at the same time. She was confirmed by the Senate earlier the same day. Anyway, as Secretary of State. And, she served as Secretary of State from January 21st of 2009 through February of 2013. Now, the overlayment of the Clinton Foundation and the emails and everything. Listen to this. Going into her position, Joe and folks on January 21st of 2009, she already had an email account. She already had her server, at her home. Her server was installed at her house in Chappaqua, New York, and it remained there. Her IT expert at the time is Brian Pagliano. Now, you remember he was given immunity, but he had only pleaded the fifth. Yes. See, and there's different types of immunity. There's blanket immunity, and anyone who's been an investigator or police officer, you know this. There's blanket immunity where, unless, for example, with respect to emails, you're immune from prosecution as long as you testify truthfully to what you're being asked, short of, you know, murder or kidnapping or things like that. And then there's limited immunity where that immunity is granted, with conditions, conditional immunity perhaps. But, so it seems to me that if Pagliano, and there's really no way to tell at this point with any degree of precision, with Pagliano and four others were given blanket immunity or conditional immunity. If they were given blanket immunity, there'd be no reason to plead the Fifth except to cover the sixes of Hillary and others. It's very interesting. But Clinton arrived at the State Department on January 22, 2009. Her servers were already in place in her house. It's interesting because the Washington Post would report that four computer security specialists in an interview by the Post said that having a server at her house, it's reasonably secure, but it would need constant monitoring by people trained to look for irregularities in the server's logs. It never happened. And to do so, you'd need a small team of IT experts. Of course, those were never provided. Now, at the same time that Clinton took the office of Secretary of State, the State Department allowed the use of home computers for government officials as long as they are secure. Again, there appeared to have been no prohibition on the exclusive use of a private server. It does not appear to be an option anyone had thought about. This, according to the New York Times, dated August 8th of 2015. But the State Department requires that computers be officially certified as secure. No evidence emerged that Clinton's server was ever deemed secure, so there's a violation of the State Department guidelines. And additionally, the department's Foreign Affairs Manual, which is FAM, by the way, states that only department-issued or approved systems are authorized to connect to the department computer enterprise networks. Now, one reason that Clinton might want to use a private server is that the State Department computer systems at the time were widely considered inadequate and frustrating. One result of using a private server is that only a small fraction of emails used on the department systems would be permanently archived. Okay. But now here's where things kind of take a really dark twist. The State Department, on or about January 21st, when she was sworn in as the Secretary of State, the State Department set up a secure, classified email account for Hillary Clinton. But you know what? She never used it. There was a letter dated September 2015 from Julia Freifield, the department's Assistant Secretary of State for Legislative Affairs, and she stated this. Secretary Clinton did not use a classified email account at the State Department. An account was set up for her on ClassNet, but it was never used. It was never used. ClassNet involves State Department workstations designed to allow employees to view classified information. This is the forum. This is the venue that you read and look at and archive classified information. In 2015, Clinton's website did address how she read classified information. And I quote this from HillaryClinton.com, dated 7/13/2015. The Secretary's office was located in a secure area. Classified information was viewed in hard copy by Clinton while in the office. While on travel, the State Department had rigorous protocols for her and traveling staff to receive and transmit information of all types. Now, this is Clinton talking. The truth of the matter is totally different. From the time that she was installed as Secretary of State until February 1st of 2013, hundreds of classified emails were sent or received by Clinton while she's outside the United States, including some to and from Obama.
Now, don't forget the multiple devices that she lost.
You ready for this?
Track of also.
Yeah, okay. How many devices do you think Clinton had, either sequentially or concurrently at one time?
Well, between her phone devices and her personal laptops, I'd say about five at any given time at once.
Okay. Now, in 2015, after it became public knowledge that Clinton exclusively used a private email account for all of her email usage, she'll claim that she did this for convenience. Why? Because she didn't want to carry more than one device, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? Clinton used, count them, 11 different BlackBerries and four iPads while she is Secretary of State. 11 BlackBerries and four iPads. Not all at the same time, but there was some overlap, and some were gone, or some were lost.
I wonder how many she broke in fits of rage.
Yeah, threw it at Bill Clinton's head. Well, the FBI determined through their investigation, and Comey verified this, that Clinton actually used in succession or overlapping 11 email-capable BlackBerries. While Secretary of State, she used two or more BlackBerries with the same phone number after her tenure at Secretary of State. Now, how many were the FBI able to obtain, to examine?
Two.
None of the BlackBerries.
Oh, none of the BlackBerries. Right. I know that there was a video done of a montage of clips of Clinton and Comey where they showed Clinton making or answering questions about her private email server, the devices that were used, the type of information that was sent over it, basically a list of all the lies she told.
Right.
And then, you know, after she would answer a question with a lie, they would show James Comey answering a question or giving a statement pertaining to the statement she just made, you know, basically proving that what she said was a lie. You know, did you ever use more than one device?
They're all liars.
Hillary Clinton, no, I did not. Then it would show James Comey. Did Hillary Clinton ever use more than one device? Yes, she did.
Yeah.
And it would go on and on and on for, you know, point after point after point, showing that Hillary Clinton lied just about every step of the way. James Comey verified that every step of the way, and then refused to call her to a grand jury, let alone even charge her or indict her.
Well, yeah. And Clinton aide Monica Hanley, she was identified as the person who would often go out and buy BlackBerries for Clinton from AT&T stores. Justin Cooper, a Bill Clinton aide who helped run Clinton's private server, he was the one that set up and then synced the BlackBerries to the server, so Hillary could access her email inbox. Now, according to an FBI interview with Huma Abedin, it was not uncommon for Clinton to use a new BlackBerry for a few days and then immediately switch it out for an older version with which she was more familiar. Man, I understand that. But see, this is the kind of information that the mainstream media just ignores or refuses to report on. So 11 different BlackBerries, four iPads while she's Secretary of State, and the FBI got none of the BlackBerries, and only the FBI identified five iPad devices. They were only able to obtain three of the iPads, but only were able to examine two of them. All right. Now, why? What happened to the third? I'm not sure. Except, well, there's an indication there that Hillary had given that iPad to someone as a gift, and the FBI never sought that rogue iPad out. So, go figure. 11 BlackBerries, four iPads, and out of that, the FBI was only able to examine two of those. Now, during the period of January 21st through 2009 through March 29th, 2009, Clinton's private email server, now listen to this, it operated without even the standard encryption generally used on the internet. Yeah.
And when you think about the type of information that was being shared over that server, not just with her, but with all her aides and the other employees of the Department of State's intelligence contacts members of foreign governments.
Well, that's right.
The amount of information that hackers, and even people who are just stumbling around the internet that don't even know half what they're doing, that they could have gathered by, you know, not even targeting her, but those who would have targeted her or her server could have gained access to any and everything she had on the file. Even though, you know, we talk about stories of how different intelligence agencies, and even James Comey came out and said, I put tape over my webcam to make sure, you know, nobody can
watch me. We're the conspiracy nuts, right? Yeah.
I mean, these people could have hacked her system so much so that they could have been sitting there watching and listening to everything she said and did.
Well, and
this is the, I mean, from the lack of
encryption. So, what you just said what was discussed via email. Listen to this. This has been verified through investigations. During that time period where there's no encryption, no normal encryption, Clinton and her aides exchanged emails discussing North Korea, Mexico, Afghanistan, the military advisors in general, CIA operations, and even a briefing for Obama. Some of the emails were later would later be redacted because of classification concerns, including one written to Clinton about Afghanistan's President Hamid Karzai. All right. Now, in late March of
2009.
It was late in the March of 2009. Jake Sullivan, a top aide to Clinton, emailed a draft to her of a confidential report she was to make to Obama. In fact, he attached it. He wrote attaches a draft of your report. Attaches a draft of your Mexico trip report to Obama. That was reported in the Washington Post on March 27th of this year. Now, during the 2 months, the first couple of months of 2016, during her tenure, at different times during her tenure, Clinton traveled to Belgium, Switzerland, Egypt, Israel, Turkey, Mexico, Japan, South Korea, China. Her emails would have almost no defense against eavesdropping by in foreign intelligence and hackers during those trips because she was outside of the United States. And, of course, the surveillance, the electronic surveillance of her devices, because there was no security on the devices, it was much easier to penetrate. Some intelligence agencies are known to attempt eavesdropping, and they do eavesdrop, which is why, and a lot of people don't know this, there are special rooms in the government buildings, State Department, where you go in and you look at the classified material. You're not allowed to take notes. You're not allowed to take anything in or out. It is a room that's walled off. Any communications, the devices there are there for you, but Clinton, on the other hand, did not do this. Now, on September of this past year, FBI determined that, and folks, you know this, that clinton.com was potentially vulnerable to compromise when she first began using her personal email account when she was sworn in as Secretary of State. It was not until March of 2009 that access to the server was even given the smallest level of security. This was contained in the FBI report earlier last month. Now, in her time as Secretary of State, Clinton uses only her private email account on her private server for all of her work and personal emails. Remember all of this hooey about different accounts? Folks, she only used her private email server. There are 62,320 emails sent to or from her HDR, Hillary Diane Rodham, 22 at clintonemail.com address. Just, did you hear what I said? 62,320 emails sent to that address. That's an average of about 300 emails per week or about 1,300 per month. Clinton would later say that roughly half of those, about 32,000, were private in nature, and she would delete them before investigators could even look at them, and that's what she did. Of course, she did that through Cheryl Mills and a couple of other individuals, which we have their names now. And as we're looking at this, we're realizing that they don't have certification to view any classified emails. Most of her emails, according to the Washington Post, now coming out saying they were routine. But it's interesting because some of those emails involved the coordination of efforts by the State Department in Haiti with the Clinton Foundation, their role in Haiti. Think about that. The overlap. Remember that big criminal allegations about Hillary Clinton or the Clinton Foundation with respect to Haiti and the misappropriation of funds with Haiti or to about Haiti. That's what these emails contain, especially the ones that are purportedly deleted. 2,093 email chains contain classified information according to the research findings. That's 2,093. That's what we know of in the 32,000 that were not deleted. Clinton herself authored 104 emails that contain classified material. 104 emails that contain classified material. Now, there's no getting around, oh, well, it wasn't classified before. No, it was classified right from the moment, the keystroke. So, she authored 104. This is what investigation found of the emails that have been released. 104 of those emails contain classified information. Comey did not say this. All right, 22 of her emails were later determined to be top secret, or even higher than top secret in some cases, due to the mention of highly secretive secret access programs.
Someone so Congress couldn't read them.
Yes, that is correct. And New York Times reported on that back in January of this year. During her entire tenure as Secretary of State, Clinton is unable to check her email in her office for the entire 4 years. Now, she's said to be addicted to checking her email on her BlackBerry. We know this. But security officials refuse to let her take her BlackBerry into her office. Now, early in her tenure as Secretary of State, security officials offered to install a secure computer with internet access in her office, basically saying, look, here, let us set this up for you in your office where you can check your email. But she doesn't want it, never gets one. Instead, what does she do? She goes out in the balcony. That's right. Open air to check her emails and to send and receive classified information on her BlackBerry. Really? You know, John Schindler, a former NSA counterintelligence officer, would later state that why Ms. Clinton would not simply check her personal email on an office computer like every other government employee less senior than the president seems a germane question, given what a major scandal Emailgate turned out to be. This is reported, the statement was reported for those wanting details, by the New York Observer on March 18th of this year. So there we've got some information, and notice how this is all overlapping. And one last thing, Sid Blumenthal figures prominently into all of this. During her entire time at Secretary of State, Sid Blumenthal sends Clinton over 800 emails. Many contain serious and somewhat dubious levels of intelligence. No pun intended there. Now, that's about, on average, about one email every other day for Clinton's 4 years as Secretary of State. Blumenthal, who is he? He's a journalist. He's a longtime Clinton confidant and Clinton Foundation employee. Clinton Foundation employee. Folks, he's a private citizen. He's got no security clearance. His emails were never vetted by U.S. intelligence. Last year, the New York Times reported that Clinton took Mr. Blumenthal's advice seriously. Again, Clinton confidant. You know,
if you guys could read half of his emails.
Yes, and we do have. Now, we've done here at our studios and offices, what we've done is we've created a number. I mean, we've got actually more than one detachable hard drives, and I think we have three of them, maybe four now. They're 1 terabyte in they're a terabyte each, and we've downloaded not just the emails but also the foundation donors, every bit of open source and leaked intelligence we've downloaded for further research and for continuous research. And those include the emails from Blumenthal. And many of Blumenthal's emails talk about Libya. And remember, of course, Benghazi. Blumenthal got involved with business associates wanting to secure contracts with a new Libyan government, that Hillary Clinton was working and Huma Abedin was working and, from the state level, and then the foundation from a different level, from the private level. Now, Clinton's State Department would have to give permits for the contracts, but the business plan fell apart before Blumenthal and his partners could seek official approval. But nonetheless, the emails memorialized these attempts.
And one of the things that I've found that we have not covered on this show at a great length were the huge number of correspondence from beginning of 2011 all the way up till before September of 2012, until the Benghazi attack, where Hillary Clinton and Sidney Blumenthal, in their discussions with each other, she gave away key descriptions to his location. When I say his, I mean Ambassador Chris Stevens and security company. On at least four different occasions, I read in a period of 5 months where she gave the exact location through her unsecure server via the email. And it was not only that, the request for extra security and the different movements and locations to try to get the different Stevens to meet with these different peoples, when their meetings were going to be, where their meetings were going to be, and who they were going to be with, all went out through the email servers, which were unsecured at the time and ripe for the taking, that information as anybody who was able to hack and access her server. Folks, we're going to be right back with our final segment after these short messages. Stay with us.
Welcome back, folks, to the Hagman and Hagman Report, just hours away from a WikiLeaks leak. Yeah.
Hopefully everything that we anticipate will be there from, you know, a uncensored look at the Clinton emails to maybe some information and things we did not know that Clinton had done or said in the past that can come back and be used against her both criminally and at least liably for the this election cycle.
Well, you know what? The information we have from our confidential source is that the information coming out, that this round of information will raise the eyebrows and get the attention of some members of Congress.
But you know what? If I can say this.
Yeah.
If the information that's that we already know about Hillary Clinton from...
If that hasn't sunk her right?
Body count to all of these scandals while she was in the State Department to before and after that, if that has not been enough to take her out politically, as you said earlier, you know, killing babies on the White House front lawn, video of it wouldn't be enough now.
Well, yeah, and I believe, too, that there's, in addition to that, well, at the center of that body count, I do believe that there is a Vince Foster element there. All right. Now, that's all I'm going to say on the matter. There's a Vince Foster element there. You know, as we get toward winter, and winter is going to come fast, folks, would you like to curl up next to your fireplace and just maybe you'd like to read about the end of days or end times, but you'd like a lighter fictional account? Well, let me direct your attention to T.C. Joseph's This Generation series of novels. I got to tell you, T.C. Joseph has written three fantastic books. You can find it at thisgenerationseries.com. That's thisgenerationseries.com. Folks, I read these books, and I'll tell you something. They are really engaging. In fact, you can give these books to people who are non-believers or, you know, just on the fence. And trust me when I tell you this, the information in these books matched with today's headlines will do much to make believers out of them. Now, just a thrilling series of novels, T.C. Joseph takes us into the lives of three families in a world where conspiracy theories and Bible prophecies collide. T.C.'s novels move through recent history. to the events that are just on our horizon. His witty style and fascinating characters provide a great read. Not only will you love these books, as I have, but they can be a great tool, as I mentioned, to awaken friends and family members to the perilous times in which we face. Kirkus Reviews states, and I quote, "Readers of End Times fiction will be hard-pressed to find it done more intriguingly than this. Extremely readable and fast-paced." Now, Blue Ink Reviews calls this thought-provoking series absolutely riveting. Folks, get your copies of T.C. Joseph's This Generation series on Amazon.com today. Book 1, Precipice. Book 2, Pentecost. And coming shortly, Book 3, Penance. That's ThisGenerationSeries.com. Folks, you won't be sorry about it. You're going to be absolutely thrilled when you get the books. But yes, the last segment we talked about the Clinton Foundation. We talked about Clinton emails and such. I want to open this up. I just want to make a statement right now about things that are happening. There's an asymmetrical war being waged against the truth tellers, against watchmen, against conservatives and Christians alike. But if you are a Christian conservative, that's a double whammy for you. I've got a notification today from YouTube, for example, that Friday's episode, news and listener questions, was not up to the standards, was not advertiser friendly. Basically, people had filed complaints saying that episode violated standards and it was demonetized. Now, just some background information. To offset production costs and studio costs and to help us get our word to 110 countries last year and to pay the costs of, to offset the costs, I should say, of operations. And we monetize our videos. Okay. Although we are a listener supported show and we thank each and every one of you for that, most of the time it just doesn't do the trick. So we have to seek and obtain other sources of revenue so we can expand, stay on the air and expand. And maybe we can go to 115 countries, and instead of 64.5 million downloads last year, maybe we can get it up to 75 million. Who knows? But the more people that we're able to touch and to inform and to inspire, that's what we've been led to do. But it does cost money. I'm sorry, but it does. Mm-hmm. Well, here's what's happened. Just to let everyone know, there are a number of enemies out there. The obvious enemies, the progressive leftists, the Democratic National Socialists, the people who celebrate the redefining marriage, those who embrace homosexuality and who celebrate the abortion. Of course, they're going to find our content objectionable. We expect that. But the asymmetry of warfare, it's gone another step. You see, there are people out there who are ostensibly, they say, oh, we're on your side. We're Christians ourselves. We have our own broadcasting platform. We walk in lockstep with you, arm in arm with you, except that arm, at the end of it, is a hand, and inside in that hand is a knife, and it's right on your back. You see, there are people out there, and groups and organizations who fancy themselves and call themselves Christians, but in fact will take, and they will, in wholesale numbers perhaps, or in the numbers that they can assemble, they will take and file objections on whatever platform that we and others, we're not alone in this, others, their competition, so to speak. And you know, there are these smaller entities out there who proclaim themselves to be Christians, but what they are attempting to do is take us down, or at least they can't take us down, so they will affect us kind of like a death through 1,000 paper cuts. Keep us busy and keep us on defense. And that's what we're seeing right now. So just what I'm telling you is this. And you're going to see this, ladies and gentlemen, each and every one of you who are Christians, who are talking about the word and talking about morality and spirituality, you're going to experience this in your own families. You're going to have in your own neighborhoods, in your own jobs. You might want, an analogy would be this. You're going to be working one day, and you're going to have a Bible on your desk, maybe, or a Bible on your shelf, and someone's going to complain about that to human resources. The very person who says, "Yeah, you know, go ahead. I read Proverbs every day. I read Psalms every day." But whether it's out of jealousy, envy, spite, whatever, they will turn you in. Maybe because they want your position. Or maybe it's just to garner favor with those people, you know, the management. That's an analogy to what we're seeing today. The reason I brought this up is this is becoming more and more insidious, and the infiltration is even greater. Folks, the war is heating up, and the war for information is heating up. And I just want to let everyone know, I want you to understand this, because we are busy fighting these attacks. And these attacks, whether they are attacks like censorship, attempts to censor by taking out the monetization, which, okay, you know, it's just a time consuming process to fight against that. But it's taking place. So it's attempting to defund this operation and others like it. And it's an attempt to there are numerous other ways. Lawfare, for example. And I'm not going to get into all of that, but all of this, I just want to mention this, all of this is heating up now. And I've never seen it at this level. Steve Quayle and I were talking about this earlier today, where things are just breaking loose in all aspects. You know, they want... Not just with the obvious enemies, as I said, but even within the body of the church, the body of the Christian community. So be very careful, ladies and gentlemen, who you trust. And that brings me to another thought here too, as we get closer to whatever event horizon there might be. You know, I look at the landscape, and I wonder how many people will sell you to the enemy for a meal, for whatever it might be. You know, they're hungry, or they want a seat at the globalist table, or they want favor from those who are attempting to subjugate all of us, so that they're going to sell us out. Watch who you trust, and that's hard for me to say. It really is, but watch who you trust, because it's a whole new environment out there. I never thought I'd see what I'm seeing now. I never thought I'd see, Joe, the viciousness of people, and then the very same people come out and say, I'm just preaching the word of God. Really? Wow. You know, I'm not a minister. I'm not a pastor. I'm so far away from that. And I say that all the time. And I thank God I'm not, because I don't think I could handle that job. That takes a special person. See, I'm an investigator by profession, and I'm able to see patterns. I'm able to identify, courses of behavior and analyze behavior. And I'm seeing this. And I'm seeing some really wretched things. So, folks, just bear that, keep that in mind, and understand that we are all under attack, and you're going to be as well. If you stand for what is right, you're going to be as well. But at the same time, and I heard this earlier, you said it two or three different times, Joe, we all should have an attitude of gratitude. I like that, an attitude of gratitude. You were talking about that before.
Yeah, Greg Jackson was talking about, you know, how insignificant the amount of time we spend on this earth is, you know, compared to
Yeah, one dot on the paper, right?
Compared to eternity. And when you think about all the things that we complain about, even though, you know, most of our basic needs are taken care of, we still complain and are unhappy. And, you know, if we're inconvenienced in any way, we tend to get on the grumpy side. And
yeah, of course.
You know, it can screw up our whole day. But we need to, you know, reverse that and have that attitude of gratitude, because not only will it change your perception and the way you look at life, it'll open your heart up too, to being more compassionate and more loving towards others. And so many people are hard-hearted today that, you know, at least the Christians, those who are Christians, can try to be more grateful, even when they're going through difficult and tough times, because we know that they are only temporary and that they are only in the physical, not in the spiritual. When everything's said and done.
Yeah.
So being grateful is something that doesn't come naturally, I don't think, for any of us.
No, you know, it's easy to be grumpy. Grumpy is kind of like Joe kids around with me. Well, not really kid. I think he's serious. You know, my default is grouchy. And it takes work. Mm-hmm. It takes work not to be. It takes work to not be that way. And I have to say, when you sit down and you realize where we are, I mean, my goodness, folks, most of the people listening to this broadcast are living in relative comfort. You're not listening to this on the battlefields or on the streets of Syria, for example, or Aleppo, or Damascus. Although we do have some listeners in the Middle East, chances are you're not listening to this as you're waiting for the next rocket to fall. Now, we have, of course, listeners who are driving patrol cars and once in a while taking on bullets and riders. But,
and everybody has problems. It doesn't matter. I mean, you could, you know, be $100,000 in debt today and win $100 million tomorrow. That's not going to guarantee you any kind of happiness at all.
No, it's not.
Everybody looks at everybody else's situation and thinks, oh, if I only had this, or if things were only going this way for me, or if I only had this job or that amount of money, everything would be perfect. And that's not the case.
No, it's not. And it
never is.
It's easier. No, and the grass is always, that's what my father used to tell me. Oh, the grass is always greener on the other side. Yeah. Until you get on the other side and you realize that now you've got the same problems, or it's a mindset among us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have to really understand, number one, I mean, we have to have the attitude of gratitude, because we have to be thankful for what we do have. I remember earlier this year, it's something when my wife was, stricken with, I thought it was a heart attack. It was, you know, during the early dark hours of the morning, and she had awakened me and said, "I think I'm having a heart attack." And you know, at that very moment, there's nothing else in life that matters. You know, the status of your mortgage doesn't matter. The car payment doesn't matter. What you're going to do that day, or that inconvenient meeting that you have scheduled, that doesn't matter. And that could happen to you tonight. And we have to put things in perspective, don't we? We have to have that attitude of gratitude. We have to have that feeling that, well, we have to have perspective. And once we have that perspective, I do believe that we'll be a lot happier, each and every one of us. And we have to have faith in God, that God knows what is best for us. Now, that doesn't mean we can just kind of lay back and be on autopilot. No, we have to occupy, and we have to do things, but it doesn't mean that, we're going to have problems. Sure, we're going to have problems. But as long as there's breath, there's life, there's hope, regardless of your situation. And we have a lot of people listening who are impaired and confined to their homes and hospital beds. One person I know is confined to his hospital bed right now. Paul, I want to just say that, you know, we're praying for you, but you know, it's, but even he said, look, it could be a lot worse. And think about that. You know, it could be a lot worse for all of us, regardless of station. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, it could. While we have a few minutes here, I want to go over the schedule with you guys for this week. as we are coming down to our last sure. 8 minutes, 10 minutes in the show, as the schedule loads here, we have this week, starting tomorrow, we have Dr. Mike Spaulding in hour number two, followed by Stan Deo in hour number three.
Okay.
Wednesday, for hours two and three, Brandon House. This is going to be a good guest. Yep. Yeah, he's an author of several books dealing with doctrinal issues. For 2 hours on Thursday from 8 to 10, Paul McGuire will be our guest.
Oh, man. Paul's got a lot to say coming up this segment, or this week.
And then closing out the week on Friday, author Dan Goodwin, his latest book, God's Final Jubilee, as well, he's working on another book and a free conference he has coming up on October 15th. We're going to be talking about that, and look for information on the Hagin Report about that. I'm going to post the pamphlet for his free conference. It's being held in Minnesota. So if you're anywhere in Minnesota and you're able and around that area and you want to go to a conference for free, I guess you only have to pay for your hotel rooms or wherever you're going to stay. You'll be able to do that, and we'll post that information on HagmanReport.com.
With Paul McGuire going to be talking about the on Thursday, going to be talking about some extremely serious geopolitical events, and then Dan Goodwin on Friday talking about the prophetic implications of picking up. I think it's going to be a good 1-2 punch how that's going to play out. Mm-hmm. So, folks, tune in this week. And by the way, I want to thank people who are subscribing to our YouTube channel that does elevate our rankings. It elevates our visibility. So if you haven't done so already, please subscribe to our YouTube channel, as well as our social networking channels as well. That's Facebook at Hagman Report, or Facebook Hagman Report, and Twitter at Hagman Report. And the reason we ask you to do that is we're using the communication system of the globalists to spread the word. It's kind of like having an in with the a communication. That's simple as that. We're using the communication system of the globalists to advance our objectives, or God's objectives, I should say, not ours, but God's, using their tools against them.
And let me add this. The internet was apparently handed over.
Yes, it was. Well, the ICANN. I see. Yes, the ICANN was handed over effective. And that, you know what, Joe? That shows you the spineless eunuch nature of our Congress. They could have stopped that.
I thought they were going to.
Yeah, they know.
They handed it over, no issue. And
here you go. Kind of like the Panama Canal back in 1999. Remember that? Carter gave it away in the 79 and 99. It went to, yeah.
And as most, just about every guest we talked about on our show about this has said that, you know, the results from this move would not be felt immediately, that it would be a slow crossover and convergence, specifically when dealing with, you know, shutting down and countering political opposition speak seeing the effects from it would take a little bit of time.
See, there's always going to be an internet. There's always going to be an internet. The use and the...
like there's always journalism, it just doesn't mean it's honest and fair.
Yep.
If there's a real... If Assange is for real in his threats of an October surprise, do you think that there's anything we need to be concerned about that might just happen in the next 24 hours that would take focus away from what Assange would release?
There's always that possibility. There is always that possibility right now.
There is always that possibility, but we're dealing with the Clintons, so I have to ask.
I would look toward... however, at what point do you stop? You know, you're never going to stop the refreshment of the Drudge Report page, for example. It's always going it's like watching a news ticker. If you've ever seen those, you go to Times Square and you see the news tickers on the bottom of the screens. Mm-hmm. They're always going to go. I mean, they're always going and going and going and going. It's the attention span of the American people in particular, and of the West in general, that really needs to refocus. And I think you're right. I think we should watch for maybe a Monica missile, if you will, from the Clinton camp. Yes, I think it could very well, there could very well be something that would happen that would deflect the intensity. However, it's my understanding, and I'll just leave it at this. I believe that whatever is released from Assange, and folks, by the way, we're going to be covering this at 3 o'clock, beginning 3 o'clock Eastern time, AM tomorrow, just several hours from now. We're not going to go live or anything like that. Alex Jones is. You can go ahead but we're going to be in office. Manning, you know, with coffee, purple sticks from Health Masters, and some vitamin B12 and vitamin C. But we're going to be manning this and monitoring this at 3 o'clock, beginning then, and posting the Hagman Report as well as our social networking page. But you know, we need to rely on the focus of the people who are listening and paying attention. It's you folks we need to rely upon and to get the message out and to maintain the focus, because kind of like working an investigation, you can when you work in an investigation, you don't want to have blinders. However, you want to have focus. So we need to focus on the information whilst keeping our eyes on everything else, but not be distracted at the point of completely changing the subjects, if that makes a difference, or if that makes sense.
I want to close out with this, because I did not cover this today, and you posted this on the website, and this is something that we definitely should get into, and we only have a few minutes left, so we're going to do it now. What do you guys think about this? How many of you heard about what information has come out over the weekend about Al-Qaeda and the Pentagon? The Pentagon paid for fake Al-Qaeda videos. A controversial foreign PR firm known for representing unsavory characters was paid millions of dollars by the Pentagon to create fake terrorist videos. The Pentagon gave a controversial UK PR firm over $500 million, $500 million plus, to run a top-secret propaganda program in Iraq. The Bureau of Investigative Journalism has revealed Bell Pottinger's output included short TV segments made in the style of Arabic news networks and fake insurgent videos, which could be used to track the people who watch them, according to a former employer. The agency staff worked alongside high-ranking U.S. military officers in their Baghdad Camp Victory headquarters as the insurgents raged outside. Bell Pottinger's former chairman, Lord Tim Bell, confirmed to the Sunday Times, which has worked with the Bureau on this story, that the firm had worked on a covert military operation covered by various secret documents.
Does that not call into question every Al-Qaeda video that we've seen? And see, mm-hmm. we ran into this before. You monitor, for example, an Arabic language website, you see an Al-Qaeda video posted for propaganda purposes, and all of a sudden, when you begin tracing that back to the source, you run into some weird things, and suddenly you find that hey, this name of this poster traces back to a cutout, and that cutout could very well be associated with, or at least appears to be associated with, an intelligence agency. And here it's being traced back to the Pentagon. We've seen this before.
David Petraeus signed off on it.
Oh, yeah.
Then the commander of the coalition forces in Iraq, and on occasion by White House, he said, former David Petraeus signed off on it. And he ended up being the head of the CIA.
Sure.
And
disgraced, according to, well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it says that these types of media operations are commonly used in the Iraqi military time. And they said that these type of black ops are used for tracking who is watching a certain thing. A pretty standard part of the industry toolkit.
Now, you've seen this. You saw this in World War II. But Joe, the pretext is this is to bait and to and for surveillance purposes and to bait others. But when you're doing it on your own people, that's the difference there.
And spending over $500 million, they say it costs about $100 million a year on average.
That's more than we make.
More than we make. It's more than we'll ever make in 10 lifetimes.
That's more than Eric's salary.
But yeah, $540 million between the Pentagon and Bell Pottinger. for psychological operations on a series of contracts that went from May of 2007 to December 2011.
Yep.
So I wonder how much of the ISIS beheading footages were real, where we wondered about the shadows, lighting, and the or possible the green screens.
Bin Laden stuff, too, you know? Not everything you see is subject to question.
Yep.
Folks, I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in. Thanks for listening to us. Joe, thank you so much for covering me the first half of the program. Greg Jackson, thank you so much.
Yeah, he did.
Global Star Radio. Todd, thanks. God bless you, my friend. You are the man. That's right, Global Star Radio Network. And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, each and every one of you, thank you so much for your belief and your trust in us. God bless each and every one of you. Saddle for battle, right?
It's time to take a nap until 3 a.m.
There you go.
Have a good night, everyone.
Good night.